court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, there's been a topic that a lot of people have been asking us to do since we first started doing this podcast. I think it's high time we get to it.
High time, Michael. High time.
I wrote that earlier today, and I was really excited to get that one out there.
You actually had to write that down? Actually, this topic was mentioned by some of our listeners as a good one they wanted to hear about. Eric Vallejos, I think I said that right.
Yeah.
Eric Vallejos, he wrote in asking for some information about this topic, and Deanna Cox-Jones joined in with a few comments on it, and then Carl Huber had some concerns of his own about it.
The famous designer, Carl Huber?
The famous logo and t-shirt designer, Carl Huber.
At Natural 20 Shirts on Twitter.
Brought to you by Court Appointed.
This topic, like many of our topics, on the surface seems just to be about, you know, pot or weed or whatever you want to call it. What term do we want to use to define it today? Doobies?
Well, I imagine they'll all be used at some point.
Probably. but on the surface, it seems to be kind of a simple topic, but there's actually a lot of interplay between federal and state law when it comes to marijuana regulation.
And it's something that has been discussed for decades. I mean, legalization of marijuana is something that has been discussed, and people, they've had different studies about whether it's harmful, whether it's addictive, and all those kind of things. And the debate still rages on.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's definitely not settled now. So currently, marijuana is legal in 9 states. My little list here is Alaska, California, Colorado, well, D.C., although not a state, I guess, Maine, Massachusetts, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington.
And when you say legal, you mean for recreational use?
Yes. I think that Maine, Massachusetts, I think those were just the ones that just came online basically like January of 2017, like maybe a month ago, kind of the newer ones. California is the old kid on the block.
They're the grandfathers. Yeah,
they're the ones that have been, they've been having a good time out there for a while.
Well, all the damn hippies are out in California, aren't they? That's where they've been forever.
It's been decriminalized in a number of states. It's allowed for medical use in a lot of other states, but it's only completely illegal in several states, and those are Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, South Dakota, Wyoming, and West Virginia.
My God, Virginia.
I can't even believe it.
Our own state has their back turned on us.
West Virginia, it is legal to open carry a firearm, or you can carry a concealed weapon without even a permit, but...
Hell, you can even marry your first cousin.
I don't think that's legal, but...
Oh. Uh-oh. We better give our first cousin a call.
That's a bad stereotype. Let's not proliferate it. But as far as, like, the gun thing, like I said, the record straight, I'm actually a proud gun owner, and I like my guns, but I just think
you can pry them from my cold, dead fingers.
Exactly. But I just think that basically there needs to be some sort of licensing for the concealed carry permit. I mean, it just kind of bothers me that you don't have to have anything out there.
If you're 18 or 21, what is it? It's one or the other.
I don't know.
It's 18 or 21.
I'm well over both of them, so I know I can do it.
And
so.
You legally purchase a gun, you can carry it anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of having some sort of licensing for it. So I
like the idea of keeping the idiots from having them.
I agree. I mean, if you have to have a driver's license to drive a car, I think you should have to have a gun license to carry a gun concealed.
Sure.
Now, the open carry, I don't mind as much, because if somebody has a gun on them in the open, you can see it. Like, well, I'm going to get away from that person.
Hey, unless they're wearing a badge, I don't like to see people carrying guns.
Well, I'm kind of with you on that, too.
If they're carrying a badge, then that's all right. I feel safer. If they're not, It's like I told the story already before, but when I was a high school kid on the streets of Logan, West Virginia, and I walked in a store and a guy's carrying a pistol on his hip, and it was just a guy, it wasn't a cop.
Yeah.
And I decided I didn't need to be in that store.
Well, I mean, I've always had my concealed weapons permit, but I think that's like, you know, my prerogative if I want to do that, but I had to take a class for it. I had to apply for a license. I had to get a background check, and I think that's kind of a good thing.
It's at least a minimum requirement.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
So this isn't about gun control. We digress.
Yeah, we digress. So marijuana laws, they basically first started to appear on the books around 1910. And there's a lot of pretty much well-documented history that the basis for a lot of these marijuana laws were driven in part to xenophobia and racism. And that's because a lot of these marijuana laws, where marijuana itself was associated with crime, black people, and Latino migrant workers. That was kind of the basis of where these laws kind of came from.
So they figured if they enacted those laws, that would give them one more way to harass or arrest people?
I guess. I don't know. I mean,
that they felt they wanted to do that too?
Or back then, I think that, you know, by the lawmakers, that was kind of viewed as the undesirable population. So they wanted to kind of keep them in check with the things that were associated with them. So that was the basis of it. These fears were actually kind of fueled by like propaganda films, like Reefer Madness. You've heard of that movie Reefer Madness?
I've seen that movie Reefer Madness.
Yeah, I've seen part of it.
Like guy smokes one joint and he's just melting right there, and yeah. his life goes to hell. He loses his job and his family and everything else. That's what a joint will do to you.
Isn't there a guy like playing on a piano, like going kind of crazy and stuff too? And
it's way over the top.
I watched part of it and just thought it was ridiculous.
It's probably on YouTube now, you know?
Oh, I'm sure it is. You haven't seen that, you should check it out. But that came out in...
I used to have midnight showings of that to go to at the old drive-in here.
Oh, really?
And we'd go there to drink beer and watch Reefer Madness.
Nothing else, just drink beer, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And so the Reefer Madness came out in 1936. In 1937, Congress passed the Marijuana Tax Act, and that basically led to marijuana being dropped from the federal pharmacy guidelines. So at that point, it was no longer recognized as having any kind of pharmacological type use for it from that Marijuana Tax Act in 1937.
And made it a Schedule I drug?
No, that didn't happen until later.
Uh-huh.
So from like 1937 until 1970, when the Controlled Substance Act was passed, it was kind of in that gray area where it wasn't necessarily listed as a Schedule I, but it was illegal in some states and not others and things like that. But basically in 1970, when the Controlled Substance Act came out, it listed marijuana as a Schedule I narcotic. And that's basically where it's been ever since.
So up until 1970, are you just saying there wasn't a federal law against it?
Right, there was no federal law
against it. Okay, so the federal law came out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there were state regulations against it, there was not any kind of real federal-type regulation against it. And that's really where the whole basis of this whole interesting legal argument comes from, is the pushing and the pulling between federal law and state law, at least for me. That's kind of a lawyer nerd, so...
Well, I just barely exceeded that cutoff then. Because my first introduction to a doobie going by was in 1974, so.
Oh. You had a Schedule I narcotic pass underneath your nose then at that point.
Well, yeah, or 73. 73 or 74. I have to think about that a little harder. But, yeah, they were. I went to a David Bowie concert. David Bowie was playing in Charleston, West Virginia. It was his Diamond Dogs tour. He had rats as big as cats and cats as big as rats and 10,000 peopleoids stare down with red mutant eyes. It's the dawning of the day of the Diamond Dogs. And as we sat there in the stands.
I don't even know what that is.
Wide-eyed teenagers watching David Bowie descend, singing Ground Control to Major Tom's, and he's descending from the ceiling, and there's joints just being passed freely up and down the aisles.
It sounds like it was quite a spectacle.
It was.
I wish I had been there.
I was glad I was.
How old were you?
16.
16 at a David Bowie concert in Charleston, West Virginia with doobies being passed all around you.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive.
That's right. I never felt more alive. It was just like if you ever have seen the movie Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
It was like somebody followed me around with a camera my junior year in high school. I mean, I knew those guys in that movie, I think.
Oh, I love that movie. And party at the Moon Tower later. You're all invited.
And what is that famous line that Matthew McConaughey has of that about high school girls?
Oh, what was it? Oh, yeah. I like high school girls. I keep getting older and they stay the same age.
I think that was his first movie he was in.
I don't know if it was his first movie. It was his first, like really popular movie, I know for a fact.
Yeah, they just kind of cast him as an afterthought, and then his part kind of grew because of his personality.
I like when he's sitting in the car, and the guy's getting in. He's like, hey, man, watch the leather. I could do Dazed and Confused quotes all night long. Basically, the DEA was formed in 1973, pretty much right after the Controlled Substance Act, and it combined the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs with some other federal agencies. I'd never heard of that before. The Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs.
And that became the DEA.
Yes.
Drug Enforcement Agency.
And this all kind of stems from about the same era, and Richard Nixon kind of began the war on drugs when he stated that drug abuse was public enemy number one. That war on drugs has continued to kind of grow and grow and grow. Until now, it's estimated the U.S. spends $51 billion annually on the war on drugs. Now, of course, not all that's for marijuana. That's just the whole
whole shebang. War on drugs, but
$51 billion on this.
I think that also spawned Cheech and Chong.
Probably.
And their drug culture activism.
Yeah.
Dave's not here.
I've seen I think all their movies.
That's from their album.
Oh, really?
The vinyl. Yeah.
The vinyl?
Yeah. Yeah, knock on the door. Dave's not here.
I need to revisit those because I listened to those when I was younger.
Yeah.
I listened to the Cheech and Chong and like Gallagher and all those different ones when I was younger. The old Bill Cosby where he's talking about Noah building an ark.
Yeah, that one. There's an old Steve Martin album.
Oh, yeah. Can I get a blue light?
Yeah,
can I get a blue light?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's Get Small. That's terminology that I
saw him in Cosby. He came to Huntington.
Really?
And did that stand-up routine in Huntington. I saw that when I was a kid.
Was it the same one basically on the album?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
So we mentioned that basically marijuana is a Schedule I narcotic. And some other narcotics aside from marijuana, which are Schedule I narcotics, you have heroin, LSD, mescaline, MDMA, GHB, ecstasy, and psilocybin. So those are the kind of the ones.
Psilocybin, isn't that mushrooms?
That's mushrooms. Those are mushrooms that make you a fun guy.
Man, I love mushrooms on my pizza.
I do too. I love all kinds of mushrooms.
Not and those kind of mushrooms, though.
I like all kinds of mushrooms. No, mushrooms on a pizza.
You're a real fun guy.
Most of the opiates and other drugs that that doctors prescribe, they're listed as Schedule II because they have an accepted medical use. And that's kind of one of the major dichotomies between Schedule I and Schedule II is Schedule II have some sort of medical use for them. And Schedule I allegedly do not have.
Those are illegal drugs.
They're illegal drugs. They have no medical use. They're just whatever.
And therein lies part of the problem because a lot of the stuff with, you get a lot of debate back and forth about marijuana. Does it have positive effects or is it just a drug? Is that just an excuse? You can't run tests on it. You can't do tests with Schedule I drugs because it's illegal.
Exactly.
So if they would make it a Schedule II drug, then doctors and scientists could do tests and actually determine what it does. But they've never allowed that to happen. So now all you have is anecdotal information about people that either took a chance or in places where they did okay the medical marijuana and stuff like that. And they say, yes, this helped my symptoms for this or that.
Yeah. That, as we said, the Controlled Substance Act was passed in 1970. And essentially after that happened, all the states fell in line and passed laws which outlawed marijuana. So that was kind of the genesis of a nationwide, not quorum, because quorum would not mean everybody, but a nationwide...
A nationwide banning of marijuana.
Exactly. Banning.
Man, and I think most of what I remember as a kid hearing is that marijuana was considered a gateway drug.
Right.
That you would start out, if they let you smoke marijuana, it would lead to harder drugs. That's what they said.
Yeah, and I've always heard that too. And whether or not that there's any kind of actual empirical evidence which backs that up, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's studies that say that.
Well, they do say medically that it doesn't, it's not an addictive drug.
Right. Chemically, it is not it's not addictive like heroin or even some of the Schedule II.
Cocaine or
Schedule II drugs actually have those.
Oxycodone and all those.
Yeah. When I was getting ready for this, I was getting ready to go on a whole tirade about how those are much worse than marijuana is and all that. But then I realized I was kind of getting off topic. So.
Well, and what it makes me think is, what if marijuana were legal and it doesn't have those same side effects? It doesn't have the addictive qualities and it's legal. So you're operating, I would assume if it's legal, it's going to operate like a liquor store.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, and so if it was, would that keep people possibly from abusing opioids and some things like that, that they would do this, it would do this instead because it's legal.
Yeah, I absolutely think it would. I really do believe that. But the one thing is that marijuana, all these state laws basically say you can grow your own plants and have your own for personal use. The problem is that you can't actually grow your own Oxycontin pills. So therefore, they have to be produced by some sort of pharmaceutical company. They make money off that. So I think there's a big pressure from large pharmaceutical companies to not allow this to go through.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that's going to change with some of these lawsuits that are taking place now where states are suing these pharmaceutical companies. You've got now individual towns and counties that are suing the pharmaceutical companies because they're saying your drug caused all kinds of damage to our city or our county.
Yeah, and that actually is, I don't know that that's nationwide, but I know in West Virginia, that's a thing that's trending right now. And actually, I want to plan on talking about that in a future episode.
Oh, okay. I won't give away. Shh. Just forget I mentioned that.
Yeah, but the pharmaceutical companies dumped just millions and millions and millions of opiates in West Virginia and basically preyed on the people of West Virginia, my opinion.
They did. And they need to get rid of lobbyists for pharmaceutical companies coming in there. We don't need people going and telling doctors what to prescribe. We don't need advertising on there telling people, here's a pill you should ask for. I want my doctor to know what I need, and I want my doctor to prescribe it. I don't want to go in there and tell my doctor, hey, doctor, give me one of these. I saw it on TV, and it looks like something I could use.
Yeah.
I don't take away all that. And I agree. You know, I just don't think it's right.
Basically, marijuana was verboten until 1996 when things started to change. And that was when California passed Proposition 215, which allowed for medical marijuana usage. And that was kind of the gateway law.
To the gateway drug.
To the gateway drug. Most recently, in July of 2016, the U.S. Department of Justice, the DEA, published a 66-page report on why marijuana should still be considered a Schedule I controlled substance. So basically, they had a chance to take it off of being a Schedule I substance. And this report came out, and they basically said, as DEA sets forth in detail below, the evidence shows that, and there were different factors they looked at, that the actual relative potential for abuse was number one, that marijuana has a high potential for abuse. Number two, that scientific evidence of pharmacological effect, that the scientific understanding of marijuana continues to need to be studied and educated on, which they can't because it's Schedule I.
It's illegal. You can't study it.
It's Catch-22. Basically, there's no...
They teach rats to smoke joints.
They do.
Yeah. That's because they can't test it on humans. So they've taught rats to go over and puff on a fatty so they can see what kind of effects it has on rats. And they figure we're all just like rats.
Do they listen to Bob Marley while they do it?
Probably so. Can you see these rats back there, Rasta dudes, and they got on like the different color stuff like Jamaica? As you notice, what beer I'm drinking.
You're
tonight.
Drinking Red Stripe.
Yeah, the beer of Jamaica. I thought that would be prime for this topic. So
that's so funny.
But I mean, the Rasta rat, yo, man, roll me a fatty. I'm going to go to town here on this lab test.
That's right. There's layers upon layers in our podcast. That's right. The third thing that they basically put out was there was current scientific knowledge was insufficient. Number four was a history and current pattern of abuse. Five was scope, duration, and significance of abuse. Six was risk, if any, of public to health. Seven was psychic or physiological dependence. And basically, they said in this study that, or this paper, that long-term heavy use of marijuana can lead to physical dependence and withdrawal following discontinuation, which is basically contrary to almost any medical thing you would read. And then number eight, of course, immediate precursor, that marijuana is they said marijuana is not an immediate precursor of any controlled substance. So
how about low sperm count? Does it cause that?
I mean, it could be birth control. That's medically, yeah. That's a medical use, right?
I don't think it actually reduces the number of them. I just think it makes them too lazy to swim.
They're a little confused.
They don't know which way to go.
They go back out. In order to determine whether or not they can move something off Schedule One, it's specified in 21 U.S.C. 812b1, and the three criteria for the acting administrator, they have to find that A, the drug or other substance has a high potential for abuse, B, the drug or other substance has no currently accepted medical use and treatment in the United States, and C, there's a lack of accepted safety for use of the drug or other substance under medical supervision. So that's what they look at when determining whether or not a Schedule I narcotic.
So what we're saying is the DEA, that's the DEA that put that out?
Yep.
So they're still campaigning to make it, keep it a Schedule I. And here we are with states that have okayed it So the states are all in direct conflict with the federal government, and the federal government won't change a thing.
That's right.
And if I remember right, there was some, when the medical marijuana first started, there was some raids of some of these places by the federal government over the state's objection. And now I think that they have now taken the stance that they're going to leave them alone.
Right. Well, there's actually something else that came out. But I just want to point out, it seems to me for the DEA to be the one who regulates this and decides on all this, their budget comes from all this. There seems to be a slight conflict of interest, if you ask me. And I'm just...
Well, sure. Just if you eliminate that, they might not need as many of them, huh?
Exactly. But what you were talking about, there was a slight change in August of 2013 with the federal government with regard to marijuana. And that was actually before this DEA Schedule 1 thing. When the DEA Schedule 1 thing came out, a lot of people were shocked because it seemed to be kind of a regression with marijuana, whereas it seemed we were moving in this other direction as of 2013. So in August of 2013, the Department of Justice, they put out a memo which advised federal prosecutors to no longer interfere with state marijuana legislation laws. The memo in part said that it is intended solely as a guide to the exercise of investigative and prosecutorial discretion and does not give state compliant marijuana operators any legally enforceable rights or protection. So they basically said, yeah, they're breaking the law and we just don't care. Don't go after them. Essentially, I mean, if a prosecutor had gone rogue like Jack Bauer in 24 or something like that, they could have...
Is he a prosecutor?
Well, he's above the law. So they could have prosecuted.
I am the law.
They could have prosecuted somebody, but basically the attorney general was saying, don't do it. Even then, it was kind of a temporary fix because the new attorney general could have basically come along and changed that policy with just a flick of a pen. So
it was just like what New York did about toplessness.
Yes.
They circulated that memo that said, we will not enforce toplessness in the city of New York.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot.
As long as you're in a public place, it's okay. You can't go in a private store or something like that.
That was our early episodes on nudity.
Yeah.
I forgot about that episode.
Yeah. I mean, basically, they didn't change the law. They just said, look, we're not going to do anything about it. Don't arrest any females for walking down the street topless. So if you want to walk down the street topless in New York, have at it.
The one kind of scary thing is
smoke a joint. No, you can't do that.
Smoke a joint. The one interesting thing is that since it is a federal law prohibiting distribution of controlled substances, that you could actually, like in Colorado, you could go into a cannabis shop, which I've actually been in one in Colorado. They're actually quite nice. They have a green sign on them with a little medical sign on them. And it's pretty interesting.
Well, they don't have to be medical anymore in Colorado.
Well, that's true. They're not medical. Yeah. I guess they're just called dispensaries now.
They could just have a big wahoo on there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's for...
And I will tell you, they have the best chocolate in those places.
They've got marijuana in that chocolate.
What?
Yeah. That's called an edible.
Oh, okay.
Not to be confused with the underwear.
I didn't know about that. I just had some chocolate from there, and all of a sudden I was just talking all kinds of stuff about God and religion and all kinds of stuff with my friends. So
I've had chocolate-covered ants and chocolate-covered grasshoppers, but I've never had chocolate-covered pot.
That's maybe a story for a different podcast.
But that might be called a podcast.
A podcast? Zing. So, but you can have one of these legal cannabis shops in Colorado. They deal a lot with just cash, and they have a lot of cash on hand, which I'm going to get into why they have a lot of cash on hand here in a little bit. They might have an armed security guard there kind of to protect it, to make sure nobody robs or anything like that, like, you know, a bank or anything like that. But basically, you could face life in prison under 18 U.S.C. 924C because that enhances federal sentences when the use of a gun is in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime. So basically, you could...
And if you robbed a marijuana store?
No.
Oh.
If they came in and busted you, and you had a security guard standing there to make sure nobody robbed you, and the DEA came in and busted you and found...
Oh, because technically you're in violation of federal law.
Because you're using a gun in commission of basically a drug trafficking crime.
As far as the federal government is concerned, yeah. But not as far as the state of Colorado is concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, but...
The state of Colorado says you're just conducting business as usual.
Exactly.
Man. So
there's a lot of crazy stuff that can fall out from this.
That's a hairy situation to have to be in.
Yeah. There was a very interesting Law Review article I read, and it was called Cooperative Federalism and Marijuana Regulation. And it was partly written by this lawyer who's I believe, a law school professor at UCLA named Erwin Kamerinsky.
Professor Erwin Corey?
Erwin Kamerinsky.
Oh, okay.
I recognize that name because Kamerinsky is literally the guy who wrote my law school con law textbook.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So when I saw that, I was like,
oh, con law?
Yeah. Well, constitutional law.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was like a con.
No.
It's like a con artist.
No, like Con Air.
Oh, yeah. That's a convict.
No, I just digressed into my lawyer speak.
Playing the long game, huh?
That's right. But basically, the article starts out and says, the struggle over marijuana regulation is one of the most important federalism conflicts in a generation. So, I mean, he really stresses the fact that this is like a major, major issue between states and federal government.
Well, they're pushing forward with it on the state level, and that's good. But at some point, someone on a federal level needs to say, look, we need to remove this sort of Damocles from hanging over their head with this federal law hanging out there that at any time, should we choose to, we could walk in and do this. Now, I'm sure it'd be a prolonged legal battle, anything that came out of it, if the federal government came in and did that and you were complying with state law but violating federal law. But still, who wants to be in that situation?
Well, there's one theory. We're probably going to have to get into this in part two of this because I think this is going to be a two-parter.
A two-parter?
Yep. It's going to take two hits to get to the bottom of this episode.
We rolled too fat a joint. It's going to take two times to get through it.
I got
to
back off this, man.
Oh, dude.
But there's a lot of more issues than just the criminal stuff that actually pop up. Like, for example, banking. Dispensaries that are selling marijuana, they have to generally try to bank somewhere, but the banks are scared of doing business with these things because of money laundering issues. So therefore, a lot of these dispensaries, they keep a large amount of cash on hand. So that's why they might even need armed guards. And if you get an armed guard, then you're using an armed guard
to
sell drugs. So I mean, it's like a catch-22 for them. With taxes, I mean, they want to pay federal taxes on this, but they can't because of all these different issues. And there's all these strange legislation.
They don't pay federal taxes?
Well, they do, but they have to find their way around it. So, I mean, it creates some very weird...
So when you pay federal taxes and say you're paying it on your drugs selling, IRS could say, look, this guy's admitting he's selling drugs.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of issues. Another one, too, is that... So say I'm in one of these states that has these dispensaries where there's legalized marijuana, and one of these businesses comes to my office and says, hey, I want to hire you as my business's lawyer. Ethically, I'm going to have a real hard time with that because... attorneys are not allowed to knowingly assist in the commission of a violation of federal law. So that creates an ethical dilemma for me because if they came into my office, I mean, they're technically breaking the law by doing this. It's a federal law.
The federal law.
Yeah.
But not the state law.
Exactly. So ethically, but then several state bars have kind of weighed in on this issue and some have come down saying it's unethical to do it and some have said it's ethical to do it. But I mean, it obviously creates some weird situations.
Well, maybe Trump will straighten this out. If there's a guy that looks like that he smoked a few doobies, it's Trump. I think that he looks like he's probably had his share of them.
that might
what
be
else
true.
Would make that hair stand up like that?
Russian hooker urine? I don't know.
That's fake news. Don't get into the fake news. Now, there was a press conference about that today. We're not having any more of the fake news.
Okay. I don't know. I just threw that out there.
Were you with the media?
No.
All you media whores?
So in states that actually have medical marijuana, another issue too is that employers who drug screen their employees, you know, if they show positive for marijuana, even though it's legal with the state, it's illegal in federal law. So that can create some employment issues.
Well, if you applied for a federal job, I'll bet you it would.
Oh, 100%.
If you lived in Colorado and applied for a federal job at, I don't know, what, like as a TSA, is that federal?
Yeah, that's federal. Well, I think it's subcontracted out. I think, well, no, the TSA is part of the department.
I mean, something like that.
Yeah.
You apply to work at the airport, and they say, well, no, you got marijuana. You can't work. Well, wait a minute. It's legal here.
Those people are all high anyway.
They got to earn their wings.
So another issue is people that might be on probation or parole from like a state charge or something like that. They have to drug screen while they're out. But if they have marijuana in their system, even though it might be legal in their state, they're still breaking a federal law maybe by having marijuana in their system. So that can create issues there.
Well, this is becoming clearer and clearer. We've got to handle this on the federal level.
Oh, yeah.
The federal government has got to back off of this issue and let the states handle it.
It does.
And that's what our forefathers wanted.
I think it's one of those things that this I want to talk about a bit more in depth regarding this federalism issue. And we can get in kind of some deeper conversations about federalism. And when I say federalism, I mean like the state's power versus the federal power. Because generally federal power trumps state power, but in certain circumstances, they don't.
Really trumps it now, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. You're on a roll tonight. So yeah, I think really want to get into that a bit more, and I think we'll probably have to do that in a second episode because it's just like you really go into it in depth.
Well, I think while we're on it, we ought to just cover that part now, and then we can get into the other part in part two, if there's going to be a part two.
Well, there's going to be a part
still two. Still to be determined.
TBD. TBD, THC. THC, TBD.
GBH.
GBH. One weird thing, too, is that in states where there is medical marijuana allowed, doctors are not actually legally allowed to prescribe marijuana. You have to remember that marijuana is technically a Schedule I, well, not technically, marijuana is a Schedule I narcotic.
It is.
Therefore, it does not have any kind of accepted medical use. Therefore, a treating physician will only recommend or certify someone who may be eligible for a medical marijuana program.
So when they go in there, now this is in states where medical marijuana is okay.
Correct.
They basically don't write a prescription, they write a recommendation.
Right. If they meet whatever criteria that state might have, that's when the doctor will write a recommendation or a referral to the program. Now, there was one state in particular.
I refer this dude to get one bag of Primo.
This guy needs to take an eighth every other week.
It reminds me of Spicoli in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He's beating himself in the head with the shoe. He says, "You know what that sound is? That's my skull."
I love that movie. Aloha, Mr. Han. Well, there was one state in particular I think you had looked at, New York, where there was a certain, I guess, medical issues where you qualify.
Well, Carl had written about that. He said that they have medical marijuana okayed in New York, but that it's very hard to get it. Now, I looked it up to see what about medical marijuana in New York was difficult, and what I saw was that they have a list of qualifying disease and symptoms. You have to have one of these diseases and one of these symptoms to meet the criteria to qualify for medical marijuana. And the diseases are ALS, cancer, epilepsy, HIV/AIDS, Huntington's, inflammatory bowel disease, multiple sclerosis, neuropathy, Parkinson's, or a spinal cord injury. And your symptoms have to include either nausea, pain, seizures, spasticity, I've never heard of spasticity, or weight loss, cachexia, C-A-C-H-E-X-I-A, I don't know, cachexia.
I've never heard of that term.
Cash outside. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, dog.
You didn't see that girl on Dr. Phil, huh?
No.
It was terrible. Worst 13-year-old girl you've ever seen in your life.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It was awful. And then she got in a fight on the airplane on the way home.
Really?
Yeah, it was bad. You'll have to YouTube that sometime.
I'll have to check it out.
Catch me outside.
Oh, she was on drugs, obviously.
Probably. Not marijuana, worse.
Yeah, the worst. The real Schedule I narcotics.
That's right. But anyway, those are the diseases and symptoms that are involved with being able to qualify for medical marijuana. So what I'm assuming is if you have a disease or some type of thing causing you problems and it doesn't meet one of these criteria, then yes, it would be hard for you to obtain medical marijuana. And maybe you found in the past under illicit circumstances that marijuana helps you.
Yeah.
You know, and so then you're feeling deprived because you can't go get it because you don't meet the criteria.
Well, I know like in California, I believe I read somewhere that if you had like anxiety or things like that, they prescribed for that.
If somebody's harsh and you're mellow.
Yeah. He harshed my mellow, man.
I missed a gnarly wave, dude.
I know a person who may have had some sort of undiagnosed ADD, and actually marijuana helped them study and get through school, and their grades actually improved when they studied while using marijuana. So anecdotally.
I'm judging by the look on your face, you know this person very well.
They were very close.
So. All right, we'll pass on from that. Well, Michael, this subject just continues to grow. It's very fertile, and it seems like that we may be very green about the subject. So I think we shouldn't leave it alone.
Leave it alone? You want to come back to it?
I think we need to come back to it. I think that there's just, we haven't even scratched the surface of the stuff that we've gotten into, and we're already this far into this. I mean, this is a big topic.
It is. It's like hydro. It keeps coming back.
That's right. It just keeps growing.
So I think in the next one, we need to talk a bit more about some of the constitutional issues between the federal and the state law. So
yeah, there's several different parts of this because we really haven't gotten into. We'd like to go in and break down the difference between the three different uses. There's recreational, there's medical, and there's also limited medical. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we go into the difference on that, economic impact. There's lots of different factors to consider.
There are. So we'll have to circle back to this one.
All right, partner. We'll just have to stash it for later.
That's going to bring us to
legal briefs, 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 puff, 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 puff.
I almost said puffs. I really almost did.
That's eerie, dude.
I know.
Oh, no.
We got synchronicity like the police over here.
You start thinking like me, we're in trouble.
I will be in trouble. So the first term, and legal briefs is the part of the show where we go over some different legal terms or things we discussed, and we kind of rehash them.
Rehash?
The first term is Controlled Substance Act.
Controlled Substance Act. That wasn't that the one in 1970 that established Schedule I drugs as being illegal?
That's right. And what is a Schedule I narcotic?
A Schedule I narcotic cannot be prescribed by a doctor or anything like that. It's illegal, like heroin or marijuana or LSD, or I guess there's lots of them.
All the fun ones. Under 21 U.S.
All the best ones.
Under 21 U.S.C. 812B1, in order for a substance to be placed on Schedule I, the acting administrator must find that the drug or other substance has a high potential for abuse, B, the drug or other substance has no currently accepted medical use and treatment in the United States, and C, there is lack of accepted safety for use of the drugs or other substance under medical supervision.
And in the words of Nancy Reagan, just say no.
Just say no.
And also, go to bed, Bonzo.
Wasn't that in that that monkey movie?
Yeah, with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
That was what that was a reference to.
So how does Schedule I differ from Schedule II, basically?
Schedule II drugs are controlled by prescription. Doctors can prescribe Schedule II drugs for people to use. It would be like oxycodone and your various ones for depression and things like that.
The basis being is that they actually have some sort of accepted medical use.
Yeah, the other ones, they're just throwaway drugs. They're just ones to have fun with.
Well, the catch is, though, is that you can't actually
Just want to have fun.
You can't actually test the Schedule I's to determine if they do have any kind of medical benefit because they are Schedule
I. Catch 22!
Exactly.
That's not fair, dude!
And I threw out the term a couple times, federalism.
Federalism. That's not what Bernie Sanders was after, was it? No, his was...
That was utopiaism.
His was socialism.
Utopiaism.
Let's see. Federalism is the federal laws, I don't know, that apply to the drugs.
Well, federalism is basically, it's kind of a theory of mixed or compound mode of government, which combines kind of like a larger general government, like the federal government, or smaller regional governments. And they basically kind of mesh together to form one... cohesive political system.
Well, I didn't think I knew that, but I was just hoping for a stroke of pot luck.
you were almost there.
A toke of pot luck.
Yeah. You're only a toke away.
I was one toke over the line, sweet Jesus. One toke over the line.
You're a nickel bag away.
Sitting downtown in a railway station. One toke over the line.
What's that from?
That's a song.
Well, I figured, but what song?
One toke over the line.
Oh, of course.
That's the name of it, I guess. I think that's what it's called.
Who's it by?
Brewer and Shipley.
Yes, Brewer and Shipley. One toke over the line.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid listening to that, I had no idea. I used to think they were singing one toe over the line.
Oh, sweet like
Jesus.
Like a free throw?
Yeah.
Snap, foul, yeah. Free throw.
Yep. One toe over the line. You got to go back into the line. I didn't know what it was when I was a kid. There's a lot of drug reference songs when I was a kid that I grew up with that I didn't know what they were.
That all changed in a David Bowie concert when you were 16 years old.
Then I finally saw what it was. The sky opened up, and I had an I had just a connection with the universe after that.
You went on a slow ride.
When I take it easy. That's Fog Hat.
Take it easy.
That's Fog Hat. I saw David Bowie. We're sitting there, and everybody's drunked up and toked up, and we're sitting there, and out of the dark sky of the Civic Center, there's David Bowie hovering above us all. We're like, wow, man, how's he doing that? How is he up there? And what we couldn't see was a big hydraulic arm that he was riding on. All we could see was him. And he was singing, Ground Control to Major Tom. That was a space oddity.
That song always used to make me so sad.
Yeah, Major Tom didn't quite make it.
Spoiler alert.
If you don't know that by now, you deserve to be spoiled.
Well, I think that's, we're going to have to put this one down for now.
You know what? I've got the munchies after this episode.
Do you?
I've got to go get something to eat, dude.
I haven't had dinner either.
Man, I need some donuts or burgers or fries or something.
Oh, sounds good.
Yeah, maybe all of it.
Yep.
I might have a burger on my donut.
And then I'm going to play some video games.
Yeah. Sit back. Easy listening.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I am just a dude.
Thanks for listening.